You're listening to the podcast of Always Forward, the church planting initiative of the Anglican Church in North America, helping plant gospel-centered, sacramental, missional churches. For more information and resources, please visit always-forward.com.
Hey, church planters, Merry Christmas. It's still Christmas, Sean. That was a horrible Santa Claus, Sean.
It's what I got, man, okay? It's what I got to work with.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. We are in 2017. This is the first podcast of the new year, but still within the Christmas season. Haven't made it to Epiphany yet. And so it is good to be back. We had a good little break there. Sean, how was your Christmas and your break?
You know, my Christmas was fantastic. How about yours, Dan?
I just spent time with family, ate things. It was good.
What's really blowing my mind, though, is that it's 2017. That's just, I can like remember 30 years ago, you know? Like, it's getting weird for me now.
So let's talk first about some of the things we have coming up over the course of this year.
Yeah. What do you got?
All right. So first thing, details are becoming more and more clear about the Always Forward Conference that is in conjunction with the Provincial Assembly at the end of June this year, June 27, 28, in that area. And we are going to have the day before the Provincial Assembly starts. So that's Tuesday the 27th. So before the main conferences start, we are going to have a day that's just Always Forward gathering. And our focus for this part of the gathering, for that Tuesday, is going to be for potential church planters and current church planters. So if you're planting a church, whether you're at year one or whether you're three or eight or whatever, that this time is going to be about specifically for active and potential church planters. And so, I mean, of course, everybody's welcome and invited, and we'd love to have you come. But the content that we're going to be looking at is going to be specific to those areas. And so what we're hoping is that it's going to be a great opportunity for folks to come who are in the work of planting, to be able to spend time with folks who have some experience, and I don't want to say expertise, but at least experience in this area. And so it will be a great time with some great content, and more details on that are going to come out of exactly what kind of things we're going to be covering. But then also the sub-conference that we're leading throughout the assembly for Always Forward is going to be great as well. We already have one speaker who is lined up and confirmed, and that is Ed Stetzer, who is a great speaker on church planting and one of the most knowledgeable people that I know with regard to the stats and trends of church planting. And so if you haven't read Stetzer's books, I would encourage you to. Viral Churches is a great place to start, and Planting Missional Churches is another great one as well. So just encourage you to check that out. But it's going to be a real great time. So we'll let you know as soon as registration opens from the provincial side of things. But we do hope that you will block off your calendar for June 27, 28, 29, 30. And that will be in Chicago, Illinois. So
June 27th through the 30th in Chicago. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, that's right.
Good to know.
That's it.
Right on. Well, we're looking forward to seeing everybody there. But today, my friends, we've got a really good interview with our good buddy, Aaron Damiani, who has recently written a book, and it has been released. It is available, and you can go get it. Here is the name of the book. Write it down. The Good of Giving Up, Discovering the Freedom of Lent by Aaron Damiani. This is, I think, such a timely, well, it is obviously timely as we get ready as pastors, looking forward already to Lent, which is mind-blowing because it just feels like we're not even at a Christmas tide, but we got to look ahead. So this is really helpful. This would be a great book to go and pick up as you prepare in your own personal life to prepare for Lent, but also as a pastor or a church planter who's gearing up to lead a community through Lent. This is going to be one of those real practical pastoral reads. And if you know anything about Aaron, even if you don't know anything about Aaron, you'll pick up on this in his writing. He's such a great guy. Lots of good stories. It's a real accessible read, but it's also a lot of fun. And he's like really brilliant. Like, he's a theologian. Yeah. This guy, he kind of undersells himself, you know, when you're in face to face. But he's hiding out. He's actually really smart, really thoughtful. And so it's a great read.
Well, you know, one of the things that I love about it too, just in the general context of things, is that one of our focuses with Always Forward is to say we don't want to just see a practical church planting network or movement get started, but that we want this truly to be a movement of the church in the work of mission that's undergirded by really sound theology and really sound Anglican perspective on ministry and life with Christ and life together in community. And so works like this that are coming out of this new modern expression of Anglicanism within North America, this is fresh stuff. It's great stuff, and it's rooted in the ancient traditions of the church. And I think you'll find it really valuable. Aaron is on our national team with Always Forward as well, so he is a pastor, theologian, and missionary as well. So what better person to speak about the practice of Lent in a way that's applicable to church planters than someone who's doing all of those things? It's a great resource and a great conversation that we're about to have as well.
Yeah, so we hope that this is going to help you and I, all of us, mine the wealth of our great tradition. I hope for you guys, even deepen your own love of God and walk with Jesus. So let's get to the interview.
Church planters, Sean and I are sitting down with our good friend Aaron Damiani, who is the pastor of Emmanuel Anglican Church in the Chicago area, and we're very proud of him and very excited about this, that he has just written a new book that is called The Good of Giving Up, Discovering the Freedom of Lent, and it has just dropped this week, just January 3rd. Sean and I both have gotten advanced copies of this book and been able to start to read through it, and it's so good. But we're gonna talk with Aaron here and hear a little bit about where this book came from, how it can be used in our church plant settings, how it can just help shape our hearts with regard to Lent as well. So Aaron, so excited to have you here, my friend.
That's so good to be here. Thanks for having me.
And this is your first book, right? I mean, this is your right out of the gate. You tackled the big topic of Lent.
Yes.
Wow.
It wasn't in the plan, but it ended up being a resource that a lot of people were asking for, and one that I had kind of reluctantly come to in my own life. So it ended up being kind of not only an explanation of what the season of Lent means, but also a little bit of a testimonial of my own life.
Mm-hmm.
What I'd love to hear about, Aaron, is talk to me. I'm curious, like, you know, is Lent just kind of this thing that's in now? And so it's kind of this ancient future thing that everybody's digging up, or is there something to it, and how'd that unfold in your life? How did you get hooked into the idea of Lent?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. You know, when I was engaged to my wife, Laura, we were church hopping, and this was before I was an Anglican priest, before I was Anglican at all. And we kind of on a fluke accepted an invitation to attend an Anglican church, which, by the way, don't be afraid to invite people to church. You never know if they'll say yes or not. So we visited an Anglican church near where I was going to be doing graduate work. And we're just taken in by the joy of that service, not, you know, the liturgy and the preaching, the warmth of the community. But there was one peculiar thing that caught our attention, and that was that everyone was just about to start Lent. And I had never done Lent. Laura had never done Lent. And in fact, we were getting ready to go on our honeymoon. We were getting ready to get married. And right around the time that Easter rolled around was when our wedding was that year. So I kind of sort of had these parallel experiences where I was observing from the outside this church community practice Lent together. And meanwhile, I was on my own journey, which was getting ready for getting married and our 10-day cruise. And tracking those two experiences was, it was convicting, honestly, because what I saw in this church community was a joyful practice of their union with Christ in fasting, prayer, and generosity. And I was kind of on my, a little bit more of a self-centered journey of getting ready for the cruise and getting ready for extravagance and kind of having all my needs met and, you know, the joy of being married. And so anyway, that was a bit of a wake up call for me. And in the years since then, Laura and I started to practice Lent ourselves.
So you went into marriage thinking that all your needs were going to get met?
That's your next book. How that didn't happen. The long Lent. Yes.
I think you bring up a good point here, because you were in a non-liturgical tradition. You had come to visit a liturgical church. And you had come into this church just as they were starting to step into preparing for Lent, which I think oftentimes guys who are really focused, or planters who are really focused on missional stuff, tend to think
yes,
Lent can be a liability, because if we're doing all yes, this weird Lenty kind of stuff and we're talking about sad things, we're talking about repenting, and we're just in sort of ashes and this and the grayness of Lent, that it could be a detriment to mission and to reaching out. Mm-hmm. It seems like that your experience was different in that.
It was. And I mean, what happened with me was that there was something that was distinct and peculiar and beautiful about the spiritual pilgrimage that this church community was taking. I think the key for me was, you know, as one who was on the other side of the mission, who was kind of on the outside looking in, dipping my toe in the water with this new church, was that it was, there was not a forced march, and it was not a guilt trip. It was a joyful pilgrimage that I got to observe people taking, and it made me want to join the next time. I longed to be, you know, on the inside of the meaning and the connection. And, I wanted to be celebrating with everybody. Once I learned how big the Easter celebration actually was, I was more ready to go into the wilderness in the following years. So it's really important, I think, to keep, you know, Lent is one of those ancient practices that it speaks very powerfully to our culture, whether it's, you know, people who are older, or people who are, you know, millennials, teenagers. It's good medicine, but in a really joyful way for our culture.
So in context, you're saying then to understand Lent, you kind of have to understand Easter, like the fast before the feast of sorts. So Lent isn't some sort of just big downer, right?
Right.
One of the things you say in your book that I love is that Lent is not a hunger strike. Talk to us about what you mean by that. Is this like spiritual spring and not this super burdensome, depressing, solemn religious thing that you have to do?
Yeah.
Talk to us about the spiritual spring and this not being a hunger strike.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing about a hunger strike is that, you know, it's a power play on the part of people who are, you know, they're prisoners or they're somehow displaced from power. And so what they do is they don't eat in order to make the powerful people do what they want. So this is the way that sometimes people think about Lent, and undoubtedly this is how Lent has been practiced by some Christians, which is, hey, I'm going to fast and pray and be generous, because then God will do what I want. He'll provide a spouse. He'll give me spiritual growth. He'll bring revival to our church. And this is you know, ultimately going to lead us angry. God does not pay attention to hunger strikes. He certainly wants to use fasting to help us internalize our salvation and our union with Christ. But that's a quick path to becoming legalistic and very depressed, because it's not about intimacy, it's about stuff. So, you know, I think with Lent is much more, I like to picture it as, and I think it's pictured in the scriptures and in Christian history as more of a table in the wilderness. The wilderness being, you know, we've left behind the trappings of the world. We've left behind feasting for a time. But there's a table, and the table is where we sit with Jesus. And we feast on the Father's love. We feast on the manna from heaven. We're hungrier for our spiritual food because we've set aside not only physical food, but also the trappings of feasting. And that has a direct impact on us spiritually. And what that does is it is a spiritual spring because we are with Jesus sowing seeds of spiritual renewal that bear a great harvest, not only on Easter and the weeks following, you know, Easter, but also season after season, year after year. There's a miracle that's unfolding, and it's the miracle of us becoming more and more like Jesus Christ.
Okay, so let me back us up just a hair because we're so excited about Lent. We want to jump into this so deeply. For those of our listeners who may be new to the liturgical tradition, who are you about to get married and stepping into this new church and mm-hmm. and have never. Like they've heard of Lent maybe, and maybe they have this kind of hunger strike mentality, but they're just stepping into this for the first time. How do you answer the question? What is Lent? What is it?
Yeah. I'd say Lent is a 40-day spiritual pilgrimage, where we prepare, for our union with Christ, prepare for Easter, through disciplines of prayer, fasting and generosity. That's a pretty short definition. But essentially it's a season set apart, for spiritual growth where we are yoked with Christ and learn about his grace and his love and his power.
With the purpose of, I heard you say this in the first section. So, with the purpose of preparing for the day of Easter and then the season of Easter. Is that correct?
That's right. That's right. And ultimately, you know, if we think about it as a lifelong journey that we take year in and year out, we're preparing for Easter. We're also preparing for heaven. And we're preparing for the new heavens and the new earth. And I talk about this in the book, which is that, you know, we're in training right now as citizens of heaven who are rooted in earth. And that training, has to get into not just our heads, not just into our worship, not just into our ethics, but it's got to get into our lifestyle. And that's what Lent does in a very, very powerful way.
Go ahead, Dan.
Well, I was just going to reference a part of the book that I just thought was so great where you talked about, you said people want to experience the story. I'm paraphrasing you a little bit, but people want to experience the story of the gospel. And you likened it to the reason that people want to take a trip to the Holy Land because they want to walk in the steps of Jesus. You made this great analogy where you said, you know, most trips to the Holy Land don't take you out into the wilderness for 40 days before you walk in the steps of Jesus, where he walked carrying his cross and where he was born first, and where the miracles happened. They don't take you out in the wilderness for 40 days, but in the scripture, God is always taking his people out into the wilderness to prepare them for these great things that Jesus was about to do and what he was about to experience. And that you likened Lent to that. And I just thought that was a fantastic way of looking at it, of saying, you know, during Holy Week, we walk in the footsteps of Jesus. Lent prepares us 40 days in the wilderness to be able to be ready to walk in those steps in that way. I just thought it was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. It's interesting because there's a lot of enthusiasm about going to the Holy Land. And I think a lot of it is because we really do want to three-dimensionally experience the story of the gospel. We want the scriptures we want them to come alive, as it were. If it's only words on a page, if it's only concept, if it's only a head game, then the scriptures aren't coming alive, which is why, yeah, some people go all the way to Jerusalem, so that they can, you know, breathe the air of Bethlehem and feel like they're dramatic participants in a very meaningful story. And I think what Lent does is Lent is like an annual Holy Week pilgrimage where, we're taken into the wilderness, with Christ, and it's a joyful journey. He took the journey for us and we're united with him. And, So he teaches us. He's our master Lent teacher. He teaches us how to feast on the Father's love in the 40-day wilderness. He teaches us how to embrace the mundane moments as a family. As we progress through this each year, the story of the gospel begins to baptize our imaginations. And the stories of the culture that we're inundated with have less and less power as the gospel story gets into us. So yeah, I do think it can be helpful to think about Lent as an annual pilgrimage, even if you're never leaving. Most of us, self included, cannot afford to leave and take a trip to the Holy Land once a year or even once every 10 years, but we can absolutely experience the benefits of a Holy Land pilgrimage by joining Jesus and the early church and the church around the world in a trip with Jesus to the wilderness in Lent.
Mm-hmm. So Aaron, I'm imagining this 40-day period on my calendar and mm-hmm. all that's involved in participating in this. How do you wrap your head around? I mean, and let's just be honest. We have busy lives. Our church planners are some of the busiest people we know. They've got things going.
Absolutely.
How does Lent not become just another busy thing? And does it, does it add more to the plate, or is there more to it than that?
Yeah. You know, I found as a church planter and as a pastor and as a dad and husband and just man that Lent is, it really does simplify things for me. And part of that is because I use Lent as an opportunity, not just to fast from things like desserts and alcohol, and meals, but also to fast from the culture of distraction and to just take the opportunity to shut down social media or Netflix or whatever it is the Lord's calling me to that particular year. I think a lot of our busyness, is rooted in our hunger and thirst for distraction. And, Lent is an opportunity to quiet those things down and discover that we don't need them as much as we thought we needed them. There's a very profound aspect, of releasing, some of the attachments that we have, of turning down the volume on the noise of our lives. But then also it makes room. The stuff that you're taking in, does not feel busy. It actually, it's good for the soul. It's good medicine. It's things like, praying the Psalms, going on prayer walks, to prepare you for almsgiving and, being with your family, praying with Christians, praying with the church. So I find that, what Dallas Willard calls an easy yoke, what Jesus calls his easy yoke. It's a very good way to wear the easy yoke. But that does mean that in many cases we have to exchange the yoke of the culture, which is heavy. It really does lay us down heavily with distraction and busyness, for the much easier, much quieter, yoke that fits our shoulders a lot better.
So the last, I think it was 2 years ago when we were planting Resurrection, we found ourselves, our launch team was preparing in the season of Lent because we were launching on Easter. And it made me dial back to that time. And now I'm thinking, okay, we've talked about how individually Lent forms us, how we can enter into simplified rhythms and really, kind of, unclutter our lives in certain ways and make room for the presence of God in new ways. As a church, yes, communally, like that's individually, but as a community, and especially for folks like church planters, how might Lent be a communally forming experience and time that they can undergo, especially those who are planting churches? Like how, what kind of culture, what kind of tempo, what kind of tone could Lent set for the spiritual climate of a community?
Oh my goodness. I have to say that of all of the, of all the things I've done as a church planter, of all the things that we've practiced as a church plant, just practicing the season of Lent together, not only in how Sunday worship is shaped, but also as our common life together is shaped in our small groups and even in our just informal hospitality, Lent has been one of the most satisfying and one of the most formative practices that we've done together as a church. You know, it's all in the spirit of how you practice it. You can absolutely become a Lent legalist and have everybody's anxiety go up to try to look spiritual and follow the rules. But I don't think that's the vision of Jesus or the early church or the church, the witness of the church around the world. I think what we see in the scriptures and in church history is that when you set aside times of devotion, when you set aside times of spiritual renewal, and when you set aside times of repentance, it is absolutely a joyful and freeing season. So what I've seen is that as we practice Lent together as a church, people look forward to it the next year. Their hearts and souls kind of hunger to have a longer period of confession during the service and to be free of some of the bodily attachments, you know, like feasting. And what happens is I think people show up to church more often. They're more ready to hear the word of God. There's more, the hearts are softer. And the joy is deeper. It's more, it's, I find that the sense of celebration as a church community, do we have the capacity to celebrate, not just get hyped up, but to truly celebrate the gospel, to truly celebrate our union with Christ, we become a more joyful community in Lent.
Yeah, I mean,
it's yeah, go ahead.
Were you saying that would feel to some people who may not fully understand what Lent is as not fitting? I mean, you keep using the word joyful and you keep using the word freedom and you keep, it seems like that oftentimes Lent is sort of, we're just going to scourge ourselves, right? I mean, we're going to deny ourselves chocolate and anything else that is good and tasty just so that we can sit and think about how terrible we are so that we can that at Easter. But you know, one of the things that struck me in your book was how often you talked about this as this sense of freedom that comes of it. And one of the things that there was one part in particular, I'm just going to read this quote from your new book. You said, "I don't know which is heavier, the burden of self-hatred or that of self-blessing. It seems that our churches are filled with people who are crushed by both." And you go on to say that what we need is not to look at ourselves as cursed and horrible and hating ourselves, nor do we need to build ourselves up in the wrong way that the culture is wanting to build us up. And Lent helps us to have a proper view of ourselves, which is through the lens of Christ's humility, which is different than either self or self-blessing. It's Christ's humility. Can you expound on that a little? I thought it was brilliant. I thought it was very timely. Can you expound on that just a little bit?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think there is a lot of pressure on us, on our kids, quite frankly, define yourself, identify yourself, you know, show us what a rock star you are and believe in yourself and form your own identity, which is as Tim Keller talks about, it's a crushing burden to make someone, you know, completely kind of make up their own identity and also give themselves a blessing. And, to forget about our humanity, which is, you know, we're mortal people and we're broken people and we fall short, but we're also beloved. And, we're, you know, if we've accepted the invitation that God offers in Christ, we're united with the Lord of the universe, and all of his benefits are ours in an organic and beautiful and rich way. And I think what one of the things that Lent does, so it starts with Ash Wednesday, and, you know, and Ash Wednesday is when we hear the words that haunt us, that remember that you're dust and to dust you shall return. And, you know, the ashes get smudged on our foreheads, which will one day become dust. There's something that's sort of liberating about being told the truth that we're mortal, that we're not at the center of the universe, and also that our lives can be incredibly meaningful when we are displaced from the center of reality. So I think, you know, as I have a lot of millennials at Emmanuel, and I'm often telling them, and they're, to their relief, which is, you're not the center of the universe. You actually need to submit yourself to Christ and actually ask him to teach you the way of life and the way of holiness. And gain spiritual mastery by letting yourselves be displaced from the center. And you'll find that what you originally wanted, which was a meaningful existence and a secure identity, you'll receive that from Jesus. You'll receive that in your union with Christ. So Lent is one very powerful way to exchange the narcissism of the culture of self-identity for the freedom of receiving our identity in Christ.
Mm-hmm. So Aaron, for all of our church planters listening who have small churches, new churches, many of our church plants are full of folks for whom Lent is a very new thing. What counsel or advice would you give them to, I don't know how to phrase it. I don't want to say leverage Lent. That seems very manipulative in some way, but I mean, to get the most out of Lent, to use Lent as a disciple school, to introduce Lent, what advice and warnings or encouragement would you give to church planters who are trying to figure out how to lead their community in this?
Yeah, such a good question. And, you know, it's actually, that's why I kind of devoted a whole chapter at the end about how do you lead churches through Lent? Because I had to figure it out by practice and asking older pastors and priests how they did it. You know, I think the first thing is, like, you got to go first. You know, don't try to pretend, that you know how to do Lent. If you don't know how to do Lent, you should go through it yourself first and let your life become an example. Learn how to fast, how to pray, in Lenten ways, how to be generous with your own personal money. And then invite some of your leaders with you to do it the next year, or maybe the first year you do it and you're just really honest. Hey, this is my first year practicing it. There are profound benefits for your church, spiritually speaking. If you are flourishing spiritually in Lent, over time, your church is going to flourish spiritually in Lent. So I'd say the first thing would be, you know, going first, making sure that you are being pastored and led, even if you're a pastor. I'd say also, give people some basic instruction. I think people want to know, where does Lent come from and how do you do it? You can do that in a variety of ways. Teaching them about how to do it. That's part of being a shepherd, being a pastor, is, you know, gently instructing, gently correcting, gently, teaching. And then I'd say, and it's so important to celebrate together, Easter, like you've never celebrated it before. Make sure that at the end of your Lenten journey, you know, you're able to maybe have a testimony night about all that God did in your community during Lent. There's a lot of other ways to fill up the season. I think, I put in the book just some preaching ideas, some outreach ideas. Every dimension of the church is touched by Lent. And it can become a time when your church is the most active, created, and committed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Aaron, there's a lot of books. Well, there's a few books out there on Lent. And I know we've had this discussion before, but I'm really grateful for you putting in this work on this book on Lent and your approach pastorally and just kind of contemporarily in our place and our time. Mm-hmm. Dealing with Lent and trying to allow it to deal with us squarely as Christians and as community. So, hey, and I also appreciate you coming on our podcast and telling us about your book. If you don't know about the book, it is The Good of Giving Up, Discovering the Freedom of Lent by Aaron Damiani. We can find this on like Amazon, typical places like that. Is that correct, Aaron?
That's right. Yeah, you can get it on Amazon.
Okay, cool. And if we run into you at like assemblies or things like that, you'll autograph them for us, right?
Ooh.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Yes.
As long as you supply the pen and the book, I'd be happy to autograph it.
Well, if you don't have a copy, go get a copy. It would be a great present if you forgot to give someone a present over Christmas. And in fact, you can buy it during the 12 days of Christmas. It would still count, wouldn't it? I mean, it's still qualified.
Oh, yeah.
It'd also be a great resource for one of the reasons why we're interviewing Aaron here in January when Lent's not coming up here for a little while is so that if you're a church planter or a pastor and want to be able to use this as a resource within your church, your small groups, or with individuals in your church, this book really lends itself to that. So we encourage you to take a look at it from that standpoint too.
Well, everybody, if you want to hear more, pick up the book. That's the way you're going to hear more. Tell your friends about it. I'm sure it's going to be a blessing to a lot of people. Aaron, thanks again for not only carving out some of your life to write this thing, but also thanks for taking a few minutes just to spend with us, telling Dan and I a little bit more about it. Thanks for being on our show, dude.
Thank you so much for having me.
Appreciate
you guys.
Amen. Always a good time to chat with Aaron Damiani and his book.
Love that guy.
I love him too. He's never a dull moment with him.
That's the truth.
It's always surprising. Like something's always going to just surprise you and shock you, but you'll always laugh and have a good time. It's the same way with this book. It's an enjoyable read. So everybody go pick that book up. The title of the book again is The Good of Giving Up, Discovering the Freedom of Lent by Aaron Damiani. Throw that in your suitcase anytime you go to any kind of Anglican thing. When you come to Always Forward, when you go to the assembly, bring that thing with you and wave it at Aaron and he'll sign it. And I think not because he's some like, you know, huge celebrity, even though he is, but just to kind of make him a little uncomfortable, treat him like a celebrity.
Yeah, that would be great.
He would love that, I'm sure. It'd be one of those really awkward moments. Like, are you the Aaron Damiani?
The Aaron Damiani? You wrote this book? Look, your name's right here. Yeah, that'd be fantastic. As uncomfortable as you can make him, we would appreciate it. And just tell him that Sean and Dan sent you.
Absolutely.
Well, sorry, Aaron. great conversation today. Love that guy. Love this resource. We will be back again in 2 weeks and with another edition of the podcast and more great church planting wisdom from Sean McCain.
Oh, is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I got to prepare. I got to talk to some people.
Thanks for listening to the Always Forward podcast. Visit us at www.always-forward.com for more resources, to submit your questions, or to interact with us. See you next time.